This is Shaping Places, the podcast where we meet the people helping to shape the world around us and ask them to reflect on the places that have shaped them. I'm Dave Erasmus, speaker, coach, and thinker, and I enjoy turning big questions into impactful projects for others. I'm joined by my co-host, Matt Mason, Head of Innovation and Skills at the Crown Estate, and together we work with The Conduit on impact and sustainability. Our guest today is Sal Cheba, the Mushroom Queen of Lancaster West Estate in North Kensington. She runs Elysian Roots, an educational mushroom growing initiative, and helps residents use food growing and urban greening as tools for connection and healing in the shadow of Grenfell. Today, we'll trace Sal's path from Lyon's galleries and green spaces to London's estates, explore how mushrooms can turn passive consumers into active citizens, and ask what it takes to bring daily doses of nature into the heart of our cities. Sal, welcome to Shaping Places. We're so glad to have you.
Hi, Dave. Hi, Matt. Thank you for having me.
So good to have you here. We've been looking forward to this. And Matt, how are you doing?
I'm good, thanks, Dave.
Well, we'll be picking your brains today. So we want to start from the beginning. Sal, take us back to the beginning for you. Where did you grow up? What places have impacted you?
So I grew up in France, in Lyon. It's in the southeast, the gate to the Alps. And Lyon is an interesting city because it's old French bourgeoisie. It's very pretty. It has a lot of Roman remains. But we're very close to the countryside. So growing up in France, I had easy access to forests, woods, vineyards. And it's interesting because Lyon is very cosmopolitan. We had the tube. People are surprised that I knew how to take the tube when I was like 6 years old, because we do have le métro. And it's very mixed culturally. And I spent a lot of time at my grandparents'. And my grandparents lived in the suburban Lyon, and it's very green. And my memory of that is always rolling down the hills, being attacked by dogs for some reason, because I've overcrossed bushes, stealing food from trees. I used to be told, okay, so if the branches are overarching their gates, it belongs to the public. Yeah. So I used to pick fruit, tried to climb trees, but fell so many times. That's how I remember Lyon. Although it's a city, my memory is also access to green spaces a lot. That's what I feel has informed me about access, that you can have both.
It sounds idyllic. It sounds wonderful. Was it a happy time?
Yes, I know. Happy time in terms of my personal upbringing? Probably not. Mm-hmm. My grandparents raised me. I went to boarding school. So if you think about that, a working class immigrant, only child being sent to boarding school at age six, that's not idyllic. But I always felt safe, and I always felt that nature, greenery, trees, plants. I remember playing in fields that were next to my grandparents, and literally lay in the field finding things. And we were allowed to be that. I was allowed to be that and was never questioned. Lyon culturally is very mixed. There's a lot of immigration. There's not so much divide that you can notice. But there was tensions in the 80s. Obviously, this is France. But as an average kid doing average thing, you know, I think I was blessed in that way.
It's interesting. Suburban life is this kind of halfway between nature, rural, and then city. And it's interesting that you talk about the greenery and that side of it. Did you spend much time in Lyon as a city when you were growing up?
Oh, yes, absolutely. A lot. But my schools were in Lyon, in the city. But it's just because my weekends were more into the green part. And then my boarding school was in the countryside. And then I'll go back to Lyon to my parents sometimes. So the way I describe it is that I took the tube as a kid all the time, and I'd go to art galleries with my friends, cinema constantly. So we had everything that the city had to offer. And it's loud, but it never felt dangerous. And we were mini adults in the city. We were very street aware, very, very savvy. You know, if we needed food or whatever, we'll get it. There was not a problem. I'm a city girl, believe it or not. I hug trees anytime. I love looking at the stars, but I'm a city girl. I really value access to 24-hour shopping, food, cinemas, art, and that kind of vibration, which is music, that you don't get in the countryside so much. Yeah, and I spent every summer holiday. So in France, we have a system, and in English, you say summer camps. Mm-hmm. In France, we say colonie de vacances. So what happens is that if your parents work in the summer period, we have longer summers in France, they can send you mm-hmm. to summer camps. And that's where I went. And my summer camps were always in the countryside.
Did it feel like life was better because you were out in the rural camps and in the city? Because you talk so well about both environments. You make both sound very appealing. Did you miss one when you're in the other? Or did you really mainly live, you know, in the city and desire for that?
I speak fondly of both because both offered me different things at different times. And I didn't miss one or the other. And, you know, home in the city, it's not the city, it's the people, right? So your reference point. So it's my family, my friends, my local cinema that I was addicted to. I had this delusion that I would be an astronaut. Mm-hmm. And there is an observatory in Lyon, and I'd go and it would take me maybe an hour and 20 minutes on the tube to get to it. And I spent my time there thinking, that's what I'm going to be, an astronaut. I didn't know you had to be good at math or anything like that. You just go look at the stars and you become an astronaut. Anyway, so what I'm trying to say is that I didn't miss one or the other.
Yeah. It's amazing, though, thinking about what makes a place. That observatory probably helped you with the belief that you could be an astronaut because it's part of the place I live in. So it's not this distant, faraway idea some other people are doing in another country. It kind of makes it part of your own identity because you could go there, learn about it, play with that stuff. And I guess that is an important part of placemaking, isn't it? And helping people have an imagination for what they may become by what they're able to touch and feel and do in their own place.
That's exactly it. If you have that as a kid, then you can believe truly anything because it's there. Is then you're allowed to. You're not being made uncomfortable about it. With my school, we used to go to the theater all the time, right? So you think, oh gosh, you're a posh girl. No, it wasn't because we were posh or anything. It's because there's an access to the arts in Europe and in France in general that is not determined by any political party, right? So whether you have left, right, extreme right or extreme left, arts and access to arts and nature that is unchanging. Mm. Even if you don't utilize it, you have that ownership and choice. Mm. And I think as a kid, if you're given a choice and an informed one, you may never take it, but it's there. So it was never denied.
Yeah.
You know, you're not denied nature. You're not denied art. You're not denied creativity. You're not denied anything. And that's how I think cities should be, or, you know, homes should be like.
Take us on from there, though. So, you know, how long were you in Lyon? When did you move on? Where did you go to from there?
So I came to London in 1997. So I was studying and I went to law school in Lyon, rather. But I didn't know that I wanted to be a lawyer. I wanted to be something that wasn't defined yet. Also, believe it or not, I didn't speak English. I spoke Spanish. That was the first language I chose. And my law professor said, you can't do corporate law if you speak Spanish. I was like, why? It's amazing. Claro que sí. Yo quiero hablar en español. And it was like, no. So I did my exchanges at Granada Universidad. And then they were like, no, you need to improve on your English. And my aunt had a friend here and said, I think you need to go to London and you can apply to Erasmus. And then you can live in someone's house. You can be an au pair to pay for your things, whatever. And that's what I did. And I was an au pair for cats. For Persian cats.
Wow.
In Strawberry Hill, huge mansion. And the way I earned my keep was looking after those two cats I was severely allergic to. And and then I improved on my English. And so that was the beginning. That's why I came and finished my studies. And I met lovely friends and then my boyfriend, who then became the father of my children. And I think I had to make a decision. Do I go back to work in France or do I stay here?
So despite Lyon having this kind of access to arts and culture, London at that time for you represented opportunity, ability to get on with your life. Is that right?
That and more, because obviously Lyon is not Paris. Mm. So Lyon is very provincial.
Mm.
So yes, gorgeous city, problems like every other city in the world. Home, Yes. But I guess in me, there was always something, like I described, even going to university, they said, I wanted to do something bigger. There is something about London that doesn't exist anywhere else. And it is not just the city itself that has like this kind of ancient stories and the buildings speak to you. It's the people. Mm. Honestly, you have this kind of surge of energy that is mixed between travelers and vagabonds and craziness and old money and creativity, and it stays here and you feel it.
And so bridge the gap for us then from there, that period, the 90s London, to where we find you today and what you're up to.
Partner, corporate life.
Yeah.
If I mean, listening to me, you wouldn't know, but I have had a very corporate life career. I was a breadwinner. When I had my second daughter, I had postnatal depression, which I didn't know I had, but I was lucky with Accenture. They gave me 1 year maternity leave. All of this happened and I returned to work. I had an amazing boss, and there was another senior partner, and he was, I think, the only Indian Muslim senior partner of a FTSE 100. He went to run IBM, you know. So one day he advertised for a job at Accenture, internal jobs, and it was head of employee engagement. And I said, there's no way I can do that. But I felt confident that day. Too many coffees, probably eight. And I knocked on his door and I said, I'd like to have a conversation. I'm probably underqualified for this. And he said, no, come in. Let's have a conversation. And as we were talking about skills and et cetera, and he said, I hear you, your journey so far, what you've done, but I don't hear about what you want, what you dream about. Mm. What is it that Sal dreams of? I mean, you don't have to be at Accenture. You don't have to be in the corporate world. What is the life that you want to have? And honestly, I'm not joking. I cried for 45 minutes because no one had ever asked me that, ever. Like, truly. And he said, you know, you can make the world that you want to see happen for you. You really can. And it does not have to be a career here, because you don't align with what the work you've been doing, which was making people redundant, sitting in consultation processes in Knutsford, in Cheshire. He said, that's not you. That's not what I'm hearing. That's not what I'm feeling. And you have to think about that very carefully. And that changed everything for me. So I did get the job, but it was a huge formative time for me. But then things came to me. I guess that's how the universe works. Then I was approached by a friend to do some mentoring for the Women's Federation for World Peace at the United Nations. And I thought, wow, I love it. Me mentoring? What? And I did. And by 2015, they made me an ambassador. Then I thought, okay, I like that. Then something happened. Mushrooms came to me. And that was it.
So after the Persian cat palace, you know, you cast very vivid images, so it's easy to recall. But tell us about your life now. Where are you now? What places are you in? And bring us up into this zone. I know there's lots to your story.
So I live in North Kensington, which is the one of the richest boroughs in London, if not the UK or the world, apart from Monaco. And it's very green, very verdant. There's a lot of, you know, private gardens and estates. Also has, what do you say, motorway?
Motorway.
And it is above a lot of housing estates that are deprived of clean air. There's abandoned residential areas that are, you know, neglected. And that's very interesting to live in that kind of space. Mm. You know, almost like a double personality, because it's like on one street, it's just so gorgeous and ooh, and then you feel the peace and the romance of being in London and England. And suddenly then you have like high energy communities that are so culturally diverse and fun and friendly and inviting and welcoming, and they feed you if you don't have any food. That's just how beautiful it is. In North Kensington, your neighbors feed you if you don't have any food. You know what I mean? So, and everywhere you walk, they know you, they want to know what you're doing, what you're up to. Being there has been very revealing and helping in developing my own scaffolding, who I am and who I want to become. So I lived in Notting Hill, and something happened in our community. A tragedy happened. So the Grenfell fire happened on the 14th of June 2017. The Grenfell refers to a tower on the Lancaster West Estate in North Kensington, and it caught fire because of cladding and mishandling of a lot of services and the council in our area. And unfortunately, 72 people lost their lives. People have been displaced. And people living on the estate have been living with the forever reminder of what has been lost unnecessarily because it was preventable. And people are still grieving. Children that were affected are really trying to make sense of things. And that is possibly the most brutal thing that has happened in North Kensington and should never be forgotten. We all dealt with it differently, similarly, and I don't think people will ever recover or get over, you know, and they don't need to. And at the same time, there was a small public garden where we lived, because I moved in 2021 then to a different part of North Kensington. So off Portobello Road, there's very few public gardens, but where I lived, we had one. Mm-hmm. I've never been able to go back in it. Mm. Never. Because on the day of the Grenfell fire, for 3 days when I was running with all the mums to support at the church, this is where you see the tower and it was always burning and you could smell and then you'd walk towards it. And then all of that meant, and it was me as a neighbor, I think it's changed things forever in a way that is so profoundly sad. There have been organizations and institutions that have been trying to be supportive and do something. They don't quite know what it is. What emerged is a lot of reinvention about urban greening. For such a thing that happened to an area, and then you can also, I think, spread to the rest of London, is that we understand that access to nature is healing. Mm. So if people can't go to it, then we have to make nature come to these places as a priority. And then obviously then more broadly to cities, right? You know, our children were affected. I hardly speak about what happened because my children were affected. They lost school friends. So what do I say? What I could do, though, it was I need to do something. Instead of me trying to teach just women in East London how to grow mushrooms or in Newcastle or Leeds, I have to do it for the people and the area that I live in.
Well, there's loads in there, Sal. Start us from the beginning. Give us a 101 on mushrooms.
Yeah, so mushrooms are not just the fruiting bodies that we eat, right? Some of them are just used for culinary purposes, and others, and both actually, have medicinal and healing properties, and some very well documented. It's ancient. It's been used in Asia, in China, in Japan, in Korea, in Siberia, in Germany. Penicillin comes from fungi. So there is a long story of our lives being intertwined with the evolution of mushrooms. They're decomposers, they're cleaners, they're parasitic. They do so many great things. Mm. And humans, I think, a while back understood, like plant medicine, mushrooms could be that. Mm-hmm. And I was in that sphere of functional mushrooms thinking, I'm going to do something. I don't know what it is. I'm going to talk to people about it. And then maybe I can help one woman, one man. And obviously, people looked at me and said, she's crazy. She's not a doctor. She sounds like Jean-Claude Van Damme. She's not a biochemist. She's not done any research.
And so tell us practically then, how did that world of learning come to bear in that place in Kensington where you were living?
People like food, right? Dave, you like eating. Matt, you like eating?
Absolutely. Too much.
Exactly. So we all like food. So it was, can I then have this conversation through food where I develop a skill around growing them, learning where they come from, how they got to here, why they have all these benefits and then their aspects and their story. And then I'll have an honest conversation and a more approachable conversation around food. And I think that's that. This is what happened. I had to retrain, had to grow. Mushrooms were talking to me in a way that every person that I met was into mushrooms. It was really bizarre. Suddenly, you know, I wasn't alone. There was this kind of this underground movement of businesses, of women, of men that understood that not just mushrooms, but food growing, in particular food growing, was the one thing that was the missing link for us, especially us in the cities who have no connections to our food. And it became about, so if I can show people how mushrooms are grown and talk widely about food growing and why they should grow their food or eat food more consciously and the benefits of mushrooms in particular, then we can have conversations about everything else, about life, about what's bothering you. And this literally, up to today, that's why I do workshops.
It seems that in such a delicate place that's been so hurt, the practical tools of putting stuff in people's hands has been a real important piece of you rooting yourself in deep into that community.
I think that's how we answer the question about shaping places, right? And there's no patronizing. It's not me teaching. I hate that. It's transmitting and exchanging because I've learned so much from everybody and from the other programs and other organizations. I think there's this movement and it's not dying and it's a lot of activism and there's a lot of urban greening and that is being really pushed forward. Can I give you an example of a project that I did?
Please do.
With the Natural History Museum, and I'm going to use the Natural History Museum as being possibly the most extraordinary institution. Why? Because it's an old institution that was not very friendly for a very long time. They're in South Kensington, and then they have all these neighbor estates that they've never heard of, never cared for. And then they have the Urban Nature Project. And through their team, they contacted Grow to Know and myself to develop a program called Understanding Ourselves Through Plants, because they were redesigning the gardens at the museum. So we created a program, 8-week course, that we would deliver in North Kensington at Morley College. What does that mean? It means that we're inviting members of the community to design beds for the museum. So create a legacy, be part of it. You're not just the neighbors, you're part of this, and you should be, right? And that hasn't been done before. You know, something like the museum, literally going grassroots level and saying, we trust you to do something with us all along. And for 8 weeks, I delivered a course with Helen, and we had head botanist at the museum, Sandra Knapp, come over.
Amazing.
And we had 24 participants at the beginning, and we still had 24 participants at the end. And that's telling. Why? Because the team at the museum were consistent. And when the course finished, the museum remained in touch with the participants and me. And I think there has been this shift about shaping places and using institutions and organizations that in the past have been so detached from reality, but now have hired and have a new culture of people who really get it and mean
your,
it.
Your thoughts on it, Matt?
Yeah, in these conversations, I try to pick out a couple of takeaways, and it's really difficult because
final thought.
There are so many in what you shared with us, Sal, but your description of going through the experience of Grenfell and being in that community is really valuable, because we often only hear the kind of national perspective, and it has huge implications at a national level, but in some ways that often makes us miss the impact at a community level that something like that has. And that links to, I actually think mushrooms are a great analogy for communities. You talked about access and availability to nature, and mushrooms are one of the most available and accessible forms of growing food. You don't need acres of land to do it. You don't need to, you know, cultivate them on a daily basis and things. And then my last one was, I think mushrooms are a great analogy for resilience as well. And that comes from the interconnectedness of community. That's something that we strive for when we think about how we shape places and shape communities for the future. How do you create resilient communities that can adapt and shift as the world changes? And I think having the right tools, the right conditions, and the right food is as important for a community as it is for a mushroom.
Yeah. I love that. So Sal, you've kindly taken us through these sort of undulating and weaving threads of your your personal life, the mushroom journey, the community around Grenfell. When I say the world, it could be around your house, it could be your local community. But what would you love to see more of? How would you like the world to be? If we gave all the resources in the world to Sal, what is your vision? How would you like to see it flourish more and things change in the world that you're living in?
It's an amazing question. When you're a kid and you watch sci-fi films, they show you the future. It's flying cars. I can zap myself into something like a... You don't remember seeing loads of greenery and forests. It was literally you were programmed to think that the future would just be technological, chaotic, more... I think that's not true. That's not what humans want. And that's not what I want personally. And I can see that London, unlike other cities, although I did go to Shanghai, and Shanghai was very green and amazing and incredible into their programming. But when I imagine the future or a city or a world, is that every school grows food, honestly. And I know you probably have heard that before, but if every school grounds was digged up, all the cement that they have, and went back to have more grass and kitchen beds, and they're learning then, and every offices in central London is given responsibility for a plant or a food to grow in their building, regardless of where they come from. And you have the two living together, where as adults we're responsible, where we live in our office space, the children are growing food and exposed to food and know from the beginning, you demystify nature. So I think that's how I imagine the future, that that really is a harmonious educational program around greening, and that the investment, that's the last part. Because I have a festival called the Grow Urban Festival London, and what we're trying to do is connect growers and change makers and individuals to understand why and how funding can be diverted to greening programs for the future. What is it that investors need to see? And that there is a rebalance on really rewarding agricultural, urban farming, urban greening with the right investments. So that it's not like, oh, you have to give a 10-pager justification as to why a school should have orchards. This is a given. You know why? You're not going to see that, but they're going to have fruit and it's going to be green and it's going to help with air pollution. So definitely, I imagine every school to have no cement in their courtyard, and they can play running on grass again with no shoes. Mm. Seriously, as simple as that. And that would change a lot of things.
Well, it speaks back to the observatory and you believing you could be an astronaut because you had that in your environment. And if we give kids ability to grow food and create food and play with food, then that connection gets restored.
Yes, it does. See that. It does get restored. And for the adults too. Remember, adults come from other cities and they need to also believe. I think it's all about that. Just believe. And those landmarks and then this easy access into place.
So if someone's listening to this today, and I'm sure they are extremely inspired by your story and all the threads and what's going on in your world, what's the one thing they could do today that would get them close to this, get them to connect with what you're talking about?
Okay. We all go through emotional turmoil. I mean, this is a very heavy, complicated world that we're living in. Just one thing. Like if it is just touch a tree that you've never touched before, throw some seeds somewhere. I know I'm sorry, Crown Estate, but you can just throw them in central London and then just grow some, throw seeds everywhere. I don't know. A daily dose of nature is what I recommend.
Yeah.
You just try to include one act every day that it will remind you that you're part of a wider world and we're meant to take care of it, you know?
I love that. A daily dose of nature. I know that you're on Instagram. It's 1001 shrooms.
Yes.
We'll put the links in. Where else can people find you, find out about the work, and also maybe a couple of others in your community that people should check out as well?
So I have this new website. So the title of it is called sals.world. So I'm going to post the projects that I'm doing and trying to be involved with. And then I'll post if they want to link up with other organizations in our area that are doing amazing. I mean, one of the organizations that has helped and does community fridge in our area is Hubbub. I don't know if you know Hubbub.
Not yet.
People who are trying to really co-create and create change in our community. But I'm sure there's plenty of others, and I'm happy to direct them. I mean, the idea is that we grow together, right? Not in silo.
And when's the next Grow Urban Festival?
So the Grow Urban Festival in London is in June, the 7th to the 15th, and it's part of the Great Big Green Week. And we're still looking for participants. The idea is to support growers and greeners all across the boroughs. It is not a funded festival. So if you want to get in touch and sponsor or let us use spaces, the Natural History Museum, National Trust, National Park City, Imperial College, Conduit, Charles Dowding, our partners. Basically, we're trying to create, showcase, highlight the great work that people are doing in making London a better place for Londoners.
I'll be there.
Yes, please.
I don't know what I'm doing yet, but I'll be there.
You are, thank you. 7th to the 15th of June, and then I'll start advertising next year, but we're looking for still more partners and participants. So thank you so much.
Amazing.
Oh, it's always great hearing from the Mushroom Queen.
But at least you called me a queen. You know, sometimes I walk on the estate, I hear, hey, mushroom, and there's nothing after
you
that.
You need the queen at the end. Yeah,
like, seriously, that's the funniest thing that could ever happen. Like, hi, mushroom.
Thanks for listening to Shaping Places from the Conduit and the Crown Estate. If you've enjoyed the conversation, follow the show wherever you get your podcasts. For any links or resources mentioned today, check the show notes in your podcast app. I'm Dave Erasmus with Matt Mason, and we record at The Conduit in London. Until next time, take care of yourselves and look after each other.